Welcome to Inside the Pages, insights from today's most compelling authors. I'm your host, Chris McGregor, and I'm delighted to be joined by Elizabeth Bettina. Elizabeth is a first-time author, and her book is entitled It Happened in Italy. As they have for centuries, villagers who have climbed the narrow cobblestone streets of Campania, Italy, know all too well the comings and goings of their friends and neighbors. Imagine Elizabeth Bettina's surprise when, as an adult, she discovered that her childhood village had a little-known secret. Over half a century ago, many of Campania's residents defied the Nazis and risked their very lives to shelter and save hundreds of Jews during the Holocaust. What followed her discovery became an adventure of a lifetime as Elizabeth uncovered fascinating, untold stories of Jews throughout Italy during World War II and the good-hearted Italian people who risked everything to save them. We're going inside the pages of It Happened in Italy, untold stories of how the people of Italy defied the horrors of the Holocaust, published by Thomas Nelson. Elizabeth, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me today.
How did you become involved in the project?
Well, as a little girl, I had spent almost every summer in my grandmother's village called Campania, which is about an hour outside of Naples, Italy, an hour south of Pompeii.
Mm-hmm.
Small little village embedded in the mountains. And I always heard a story of how a few Jews were saved there during the Holocaust. A few Jews were saved, and I knew my great-grandfather had saved, helped save a few people.
Mm-hmm.
But I never knew the extent. A few is not a thousand.
Right.
And a few years ago, I saw a picture of an Orthodox rabbi standing on the steps of the church where my grandparents were married in this little village outside of Naples.
Mm-hmm.
And he was standing next to a priest and a police officer. And he was surrounded by other people, all dressed well, all dressed in their own clothing, and no identification on the clothing whatsoever that they were Jewish, no Star of David, no J, no armband. And I said, what is this Orthodox rabbi doing here? I've never heard that. And I discovered that during World War II, the Italian government had taken over large buildings in parts of Italy to use for their concentration camps. And when I say concentration camps, I put the words in quotes, because when we say concentration camp today,
mm-hmm.
we have images of the Dachau and Auschwitz, and the survivors who were there call it more like internment camps. That's what they referred to them, because they say there's no comparison for what was going on in Italy and what was going on the German-run camps.
Right.
So what I found was that there was an official camp inside this convent. The nuns were not there at the time, and the convent was attached to the church. In addition, they allowed the Jews to pray and celebrate their religion. And on page 13 in the book, you see a minyan. There's mm-hmm. Hebrew writing on the wall of the convent attached to the church. And I was shocked, because I had never heard this story to this extent. A few was not a rabbi. A few was not hundreds at a time. Over 1,000 people were in Campania over the years. And it's also not Hebrew writing on a wall with a synagogue.
Mm-hmm.
They also made matzah for Passover, and they called it the Jewish Easter.
Wow.
And so there you go. So that intrigued me, and that started this complete, unexpected journey. I'd never written a book before. I'm working on a documentary. I even had a private audience with the Pope. So that started with one photograph.
It's just not an emotional journey that you talk about in the book, but also a journey that literally took you through on the roads to Rome,
mm-hmm.
all throughout Italy, and the people that you encountered in the stories. It must have been quite a compelling and provocative time for you.
It's amazing, because it hasn't stopped. You have a book that has survivor stories in it with photographs and pictures, and I took four sets of these people back to Italy. Four different trips were taken back to Italy so these people can meet some of the people who helped save their lives, or the children of the people who helped save their lives. We've had meetings in the Vatican with various cardinals, Cardinal Ruini and Cardinal Casper and
mm-hmm.
Pope Benedict. But what has also happened since the book was written is 50-plus people have gotten in touch with me saying that either they were also saved in Italy and these are their stories. I am in your book, and I am on page 127. I'm a little girl in the school picture sitting on the teacher's knee. Or I found my father's name or my grandfather's name in your book. It is amazing, and I've met so many people. In fact, this past Saturday, I met with more people who had stories of their relatives who survived in Italy.
You tell the fascinating tale of you turned at the Italian Schindler. Why don't you talk about him?
Okay. Giovanni Paladucci is an extraordinary man. The Jerusalem Post refers to him as the Italian Schindler. Mm-hmm. Okay. And he is honored in Yad Vashem, as is Oscar Schindler. Yad Vashem is in Israel, and they honor the righteous Gentiles. So I don't decide that he's a righteous Gentile. It was decided a long time ago. Giovanni Paladucci was a police officer. He was based in Fiume, which was northern Italy. Mm-hmm. And his uncle happened to be that priest, the bishop of Campania. And he helped save over 5,000 Jews by getting them out of Europe, getting them out of Italy, issuing them fake documents, or sending them to camps, including that one in Campania, where he knew that they'd be treated well. And Yad Vashem states that he's helped save over 5,000 Jews. But unlike Oscar Schindler, who lived a long life, Giovanni Paladucci in 1944, the Nazis come to him and say, what's going on? They figure out what has happened, that he's been helping get Jews out of Italy, and they send him to Dachau for his good deeds.
Oh, wow.
And on February 10th, 1945, at the age of 36, he dies the death of the 5,000 people he saved.
Wow. Wow. That compelling story after compelling story, the one of Ava, the first survivor, that's the first one that you've met.
Mm-hmm.
What was it like when you actually met her?
Well, I had seen these pictures in Italy and began to do a little research. And I was at an event at NYU, and she explained how the Italian soldiers treated them well where they were, and that she and her family had gone to Italy, and that's why she's here today. Mm-hmm. And it was amazing because I found someone. Now, I live in New York City, mm-hmm. and there are more people who are of Italian origin and Jewish origin in New York than any place in the world, with the exception of Israel and Italy. But in New York, we sort of live on top of each other, next to each other. And I had never heard this. I grew up in a neighborhood called Jericho on Long Island, and Jericho is predominantly Jewish, 90%+, and I always heard the story of the Holocaust. My neighbor across the street, her parents were in Dachau, were liberated in Dachau. She was born in a displaced persons camp. Another friend of mine's dad was in Buchenwald. So I knew about these evil, horrible stories as a little girl. I'm talking kindergarten, first grade.
Mm-hmm.
But I never heard stories of survival or being treated decently, and never heard anything to the extent of what I found out about Italy. And when I met someone who was a witness to history and could show photographs and discuss it, it was amazing.
I think that the one chapter on hiding out in the open, that you had said at one point, that I quoted one of the survivors, I think it was Georgiana. She had said that we survived because of the good people that helped them. The courage that it took for those good people, it must have been extraordinary.
Well, that's exactly what happened. And there were many people who helped. And Walter Wolf, one of the first survivors, said, at least 50 people helped me. People who I'd never met before. Sometimes it was just for a couple of hours, hide in my barn. And he never knew the name of the farmer, never knew the name of the lady who gave him a meal. And he said, if I didn't have help at each time at that particular moment, and that person didn't do the right thing, the rest wouldn't have followed. It was a domino effect of goodness. And these people, let's make no mistake, they were risking their lives, because if they were caught, they would have also been taken away, shot on the spot, bad things would have happened. These people risked their lives to do the right thing for either Jewish people who were Italian, who were their neighbors for years, for centuries, as Italian as they were, just celebrating a different religion, or people like Walter Wolf, who was from Frankfurt, a complete stranger, mm-hmm. okay? And what I say is if you're not indifferent, things can be different. And I sign all my books with that. If you're not indifferent, things can be different. And you see time and time again, because these people weren't indifferent, because they risked their lives, these people lived and they're lived to a nice, ripe old age in their 80s and 90s.
Talk to us about Rodolfo. I think he's a fascinating character.
This is how Italy works. For any of you listening, if you've been to Italy, there are rules and there's rules. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times things get done in Italy with a nod, a smile, a wave of a hand, even today. And if any of you have ever driven in Italy, a red light is a mere suggestion. Mm-hmm. Yes, you should stop, but Italians don't necessarily do that,
mm-hmm.
okay?
Mm-hmm.
And that's just sort of the way it is. They don't believe in lines. They believe in the funnel system.
Mm-hmm.
Having said that, Rodolfo is an Italian gentleman from Rome who's in his mid-80s and is not a priest. He's an average citizen, but not average. He works very much with the Vatican, and he made sure we wouldn't have to go through the Vatican security with our group when we were going to be visiting the Pope. He was sort of our guide, and we went through the... There's many entrances to the Vatican because besides the church, St. Peter's, it is also a city.
Right.
And there's even a gas station inside the walls of the Vatican. There's a little gas station. And we went to an entrance with the Swiss Guard, and he said, these nine people were with me, are with me, and we're going to go through the back way so we don't have to go through security. And it was also a closer entrance to where we were staying so we could walk there and not have to deal with getting a cab. And he just said, these nine are with me. And he waved us through with a wave of a hand. And it was in that moment that I understood how so many of these people survived. Because when the Germans occupied Italy in September 8th, 1943, that's when the Jews were fearing for their lives. And that is when they needed to get fake documents. They had to go into hiding. And many of them got fake documents through a priest. The priest would say, go to town hall, go to comune, and speak to Giuseppe, and only speak to Giuseppe and tell them, I sent you. Mm-hmm. And it was with that kind of wink, wave, nod of a hand. There was no official document. There was no note. If you went to Giuseppe and you said, Don Mario said to come to you, it happened.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how it happened. And you'd watch with the wave of a hand.
Right.
And you saw how these things worked. Because they knew him. If he said we were okay, we were okay.
Right.
There was no doubt we had his good housekeeping seal of approval.
And in essence, that was the experience of those Italians as they helped one another, whether they be a Christian or Jew, during that time of the Nazi occupation. I mean, that's essentially how they were able to help one another.
It was based on humanity. This is a story that transcends all things. It becomes a human story. It's not Italian, German, Catholic, Jewish, it's humanity.
Mm-hmm.
And they just cared that these were human beings. And you will hear time and time again in the documentary that I'm working on, the Jewish people said, the Italians would say, noi eravamo cristiani come loro. Voi siete cristiani come noi. Translation. The Jews would say that the Italians would say, you're Christians like us. You're Christians. But the word Cristiano doesn't necessarily in average speak mean Christian, church-going, what have you. it is used more in the normal everyday language as meaning human being.
Mm-hmm.
And the Italians just said, you're a human being. You didn't do anything bad to me. You didn't hurt me. Why should I mistreat you?
Right.
And they did everything in their power to thwart the efforts of harming these people. Now, the statistic is 80% of the Jews in Italy survived the war, the Holocaust, where approximately 80% of the Jews in occupied Europe were murdered.
Mm-hmm.
20%, though, in Italy did get deported and perished, which means there were not everybody was good. Some people did turn people in. Some people did denounce people. That did happen. But many, many were saved because people risked their lives to help save them.
It must really nurture hope in your heart, even today, the experience of those people during those times long ago.
What is amazing is when you tell these stories, no matter whom you say to them, the first thing people say is, why don't I know this?
Mm-hmm.
People don't even have an inkling that there was a vast Jewish population of thousands, 40,000 plus people, and the fact that foreign Jews came to Italy because they were allowed in without a visa. Remember, mm-hmm. even coming to the United States, you needed a visa.
Right.
But somehow the borders were open. That was the first thing. And then the people helped. And people, no matter what age group, they said, I don't know about this. And what I find fascinating is explaining the stories to kids.
Mm-hmm.
And explaining if you're not indifferent, things can be different. And the kids get it. And there's a survivor, Ursula Korn-Selig, who is now 85 years old. And she was a teenager during that time, approximately the same age as Anne Frank. And many times Ursula speaks with me when I speak around the country.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what we say. Everybody has heard of Anne Frank. What happened to Anne Frank? The kids respond, she died. I said, how did she die? She died because she was denounced, so someone turned them in, she was deported, and she died in a camp. Here's Ursula. She's standing right here in front of you. She's Anne Frank who gets to grow up.
Mm-hmm.
She grows up because no one denounced her. People helped hide her. So she didn't get deported, hence she didn't die. She's now Anne Frank grows up. She's 85 years old. Ursula Korn-Selig was, and her mother and her father and others were helped by a priest, Monsignor Benjamin Schivo, who lives in Città di Castello outside of Perugia, Italy.
Mm-hmm.
He is also honored as a righteous Gentile. A tree has been planted in his honor in Israel. His name is on a wall in the Holocaust Museum in Washington, D.C. And he helped Ursula and her mother and her father. Ursula and her mother were dressed as nuns in the convent.
Mm-hmm.
He also helped hide them in outside of the city. It's a long story. But without his help, they would not have survived. He just turned 100 years old.
Wow.
He has also been honored by the president of Italy. Ursula went there 2 years ago in a ceremony in Rome where he got the gold medal of honor.
Wow.
He just turned 100 years old, and he's in fabulous shape, sharp as a tack. And again, Ursula says, if it wasn't for this priest, I would not be sitting here. In addition, the entire town did not point and tell anybody where they were. And in Italy, if anyone knows about Italy, the little towns, you don't need a BlackBerry, Google, Facebook, email, texting. These people know everything, especially the little old ladies dressed in black right out of those movies. They know all the gossip.
Mm.
They are the town crier. They know what's going on. And nobody said boo.
Mm.
And it's, yes, you had some people who were on the first line of defense helping hide you. But it also took just a simple average person to say nothing, not to point.
Wow.
So the entire town is involved by silence.
Your writings about your visits to the Vatican, that they're fascinating in itself too. The fact that you found yourself there more than once.
The survivors wanted to meet with some of the cardinals involved in this aspect of history because they wanted to tell them that if it wasn't for A, the local priests and nuns who helped hide us, and the local Catholic people, we wouldn't be here today.
Right.
And they wanted to make sure that these people knew that there were good people at that time. Again, the local priests and nuns and the average citizen, which was doing the right thing. You know, do unto others as you want others to do unto you.
Right.
Love thy neighbor as thyself. That's what they wanted to get across. And meeting some of these cardinals, Cardinal Ruini was one of the names being discussed at the time to be a successor to Pope John Paul II.
Right.
He was one of the cardinals that they thought might be Pope. And Cardinal Casper is in charge of Jewish-Christian relations. I just met with him here in Washington, D.C. in April when he received one of the highest honors for the American Jewish Committee from a rabbi from Israel who came into Washington, thanking him for the work for creating peace and unity through the religions. And I met with these people, and including Monsignor Caccia, who is now Archbishop in Beirut, and Monsignor Filippi, and just had conversations with them, just as if I was talking to a normal person, not even a priest. I was frightened of my parish priest growing up. Mm-hmm. He was the priest.
Right.
And this was, I know this is going to sound very strange to your listeners, because it's still strange to me to say this. It was like having just a nice conversation with friends, having a cup of coffee. And I know that sounds incredulous, but that's exactly what it was like.
The thing that keeps coming back, just even in your retelling of the meetings with the cardinals, or whether it's the person in the village, or the one who survived, and even the stories of those who didn't survive but sacrificed their lives, Elizabeth, it just keeps coming back down to simple kindness in human relationship. I mean, that just shines through over and over again.
It does, and it's just a matter of listening and realizing that the person in front of you is a human being. And that is what it's about. You're a human being. And the kids get it when we speak. It is so satisfying when you see kids write you letters, the children in school, saying, I didn't know about this history. I didn't know about groups of people being kind to Jews. I heard about a few individuals, such as Oscar Schindler or Irina Sendler. But they don't know about groups. And you have the pictures to support it. You have pictures showing Jews having a wedding in a concentration camp. You can see the barracks in the back, mm-hmm. on the back of the book jacket. You see children in school. The Italians allowed the children to go to school. Edith Burns, who survived Auschwitz and the death march, who was married to a man who survived in Italy in my grandmother's village and Fedamonte, a large camp, said, my sisters didn't go to school. They went straight to an oven. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So the Italians allowed the children to go to school. The Jewish people organized because education is important,
right.
And to their culture. And I have met a few people who were children in some of the pictures I have. They survived. These survivors all say the Italians were kind. They all speak Italian fluently. They read and write Italian. They love Italy. They feel that the Italians, even though they were in camps, treated them with dignity and respect. And for all their relatives that did not get to Italy, almost all of them perished. All of them died at the hands of Hitler and his henchmen. Mm. So they think getting to Italy was the best blessing they could have ever had. And they are very grateful that with this book and the upcoming documentary, these stories are coming to light, these stories of goodness.
Right. Yeah.
And that's important.
Oh, it's very important. And we're just so very blessed to have you as the chronicler of all those beautiful stories in your own journey. And it happened to Italy, Elizabeth Bettini. It's just a fascinating and wonderful gift to us all. Thank you so much for doing this work.
Well, thank you for having me today. And I have had the most unbelievable, unexpected journey. What I want the listeners to know is I never expected this. I never wrote a book before. It's my first book. Mm-hmm. I never intended to write a book. That was never something I would think I would do. But these things sort of just happened. And one story that I'd love to touch upon is the Milk Brothers story of Walter Kleiman.
Sure.
Walter Kleiman was born in Italy in 1941. His father was in my grandmother's village, Campania. He was then joined with his wife in another town called Potenza. The Italians put families back together. This is very important, mm-hmm. that once, after a little bit, people were able to make a request and most families were reunited. Mrs. Kleiman had Walter. She unfortunately didn't have a lot of milk, and there's no formula down the block at the local drugstore, mm-hmm. so you need a wet nurse. So here you have a little baby Jewish boy, Walter Kleiman, and he has a Catholic woman, Julia Ruggieri, who is his wet nurse.
Wow.
And when we were in Italy, this gentleman heard our story, popped up, came and found us at the hotel we were staying at the next night with pictures of Walter as a baby with his parents, letters from Mrs. Kleiman to his mother, Julia Ruggieri, in Potenza, Italy.
Mm-hmm.
Thanking Mrs. Ruggieri for helping save her son's life and all she did for them, and that the families had become good friends because that family helped hide Walter's family and other people.
Mm-hmm.
And they hooked up. And it was amazing. As we speak today, Walter Kleiman and his wife, this is their third trip in 2 years back to Italy so they can spend time with his, quote, milk brother, end quote.
Wow.
And it is an amazing story to watch these two get together. And they obviously, one is a 5'2", 5'3" Italian, and Walter is at least 6 foot and blonde and blue-eyed.
Wonderful.
And they're like, this is my brother, questo mio fratello, this is my brother.
We look forward to the documentary.
And again, thank you, and everybody needs to remember, you can make a difference. You don't have to risk your life. Just do a little something. Hold an elevator door open, or help somebody with a package to their car. It's that simple.
It's that simple. Thank you, Elizabeth.
Thank you so much.
We've been going inside the pages of Elizabeth Bettina's book, It Happened in Italy, untold stories of how the people of Italy defied the horrors of the Holocaust. To find a copy of Elizabeth's book, just go to www.elizabethbettina.com or any fine Catholic bookstore. To hear or download this discussion along with many others, please visit www.insidethepages.com. I'm Chris McGregor. Join me next time for Inside the Pages, insights from today's most compelling authors.